Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Thomas Cook India Limited Q1 FY19 earnings conference call hosted by IIFL Securities Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Abhijit Akella from IIFL Securities. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Rio. Ladies and gentlemen, a very good afternoon, and thank you for joining us on this 1Q FY19 post-results conference call of Thomas Cook India Limited. My name is Abhijit Akella. I'm the mid-caps analyst at IIFL, and it's my great pleasure to introduce the senior management team of the Thomas Cook Group who are here with us to discuss the results today. We'll begin the call with opening remarks by Mr. Madhavan Menon, Chairman and Managing Director, following which we'll open up the call for a Q&A session. I'd like to now hand the call over to Mr. Menon to take it forward. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Abhijit. Good afternoon, everybody. As you're aware, we announced our results for the first quarter 2018-19 yesterday. And before I start the call, let me introduce all the participants from our side. Firstly, I'd like to introduce Mr. Mahesh Iyer, CEO of Thomas Cook India, Mr. Deepak Deva, Managing Director, Travel Corporation India Limited, Mr. Vishal Suri, Managing Director, SOTC, Mr. Ramesh Ramanathan, Managing Director, Sterling Holiday Resorts Limited, Mr. Debashish Nandi, Group CFO, Thomas Cook India Group, Mr. Brijesh Modi, CFO, Thomas Cook India Limited, Mr. Sanjay Shroff, CFO, India and South Asia Travel Corporation Limited. Am I missing? Mr. Satya Narayan, General Manager, Sterling Holiday Resorts. And let me take it from there. I don't think I've missed anybody. I think we came through a quarter that clearly showed a lot of strong trading. Let me start with the fact that in the inbound business, which is basically housed in TCI under Deepak Deva, and he will talk about this in a little more detail, we saw a strong inflow of tourists into India. Similarly, when we looked at the B2C business, which is housed in both SOTC and Thomas Cook, we saw strong retail demand across all our segments, essentially the holiday business, the MICE business, and the foreign exchange business. I believe if we even look at forward bookings in all these businesses, you will see strong trends that are visible. And while I will leave it to each of the respective CEOs to address this, I think it's important to recognize that we have witnessed this demand. I just want to step back for a minute and address the issue of the consolidated numbers right here before I move into some of the other areas. Firstly, the consolidated numbers are not comparable. Q1 2018-19 are not comparable to Q1 2017-18, primarily because of the fact that we are no longer consolidating Quess as a wholly owned subsidiary, and we treat them as an associate, as a result of which we only take on board the profit to the extent of a fraction of our holdings in the Quess equity base.
And DMS was not there.
And of course, we've made a couple of acquisitions in the second half of the calendar year 2017, where we acquired the two subsidiaries from Tata Capital, known as TC Forex and TC Travel, and the destination management businesses spanning 18 countries from the erstwhile Kuoni Group. Now, So essentially, I think it's important to look at each of the businesses separately. And I think Mahesh will address the standalone Thomas Cook. Deepak will talk about TCI, and Vishal will talk about SOTC. And of course, Ramesh will address Sterling in his comments. At the Thomas Cook group level, you know, over the last year, we have sort of focused on a whole lot of initiatives. Initially starting by creating a shared services unit where we looked at the B2C businesses and identified non-customer facing businesses that could be integrated. This is in an advanced stage of development, and we're now that we've moved people, we're actually looking at how we can implement technology to gain productivity as well as cost savings. In this process, we will use, we've started experimenting with areas like machine learning in the form of robotic process automation, and we will commence a project very shortly to drive that. A second area that we're looking at, another area that we've actually waded into is analytics. With regard to predictive analytics, with regard to managing leads. And this, as both Mahesh and Vishal will talk about later, there have been certain early benefits that we have witnessed, and our objective over the next 12 to 15 months is to institutionalize this within the organization. The third important exercise that we've undertaken is to start addressing the needs of the organization as it transforms itself from just being a service organization to an organization that provides experiences to its customers. Now, this will actually help us expand our customer base, not only addressing the requirements of the millennials and the Gen Y, at the same time looking at what our existing customer base wants. So, you know, this will ultimately result in a fair amount of technology being inducted. So as the market moves from just being, service-driven to a far more experience-driven market, we will adapt to that change as it goes forward. I think that the only other point I want to address is the restructuring that we have sort of entered into. This is likely to go all the way into March or April 2019, by which time we would have got the regulatory approvals. But as all of you know, and it's out there in the public space, we have determined what the ratios are. In terms of a status, we have filed our application with SEBI. We await their response on the matter, after which we will submit our application to the NCLT. Of course, there is an RBI approval also that is required, because Thomas Cook is actually regulated by RBI. I think the objective of this entire exercise, in addition to spinning off the Quest shares, is to actually delayer the Thomas Cook Group. Today, if you look at our organization structure, you will see anything close to three levels. Through the delayering, we effectively hope to be able to bring it to two levels and effectively create, in the Fairfax philosophy of creating companies that will operate independent from each other, but at the same time work closely with each other and drive synergies and transferring of relationships. I'll stop there without going in, and leave it to Mahesh, Deepak, and Vishal, and then finally Ramesh in that order to address their individual performances.
Thank you, Madhavan. I'll start off with the standalone numbers. I'm very happy to report, as you know, traditionally this is the strongest quarter for the travel businesses. I'm very happy to report that at a standalone basis for the Thomas Cook Core Enterprise, we are reporting a 39% growth in our profit before tax. That's moving from 42 crores to 58 crores. This growth in profitability is buoyed essentially by the top line growth in our B2C holiday business that grew by about 15%. And within the holiday business, the FIT, which is the customized holiday, actually grew north of about 30%. So that's a strong top-line growth that we have seen in terms of sales. In terms of our revenue, margin essentially has expanded across all lines of business, including foreign exchange, the B2B holidays, as well as the EBIS and domestic. And that has really helped improve our total revenue that we've earned from our operations. I'm also happy to report that the two businesses that we have been incubating, which is the domestic and the online, has actually turned around in the corner and reported a small positive number, but has turned positive for the quarter, and that's a good sign, which has also helped the overall growth in our revenue. On the cost side, our costs have remained largely contained, and if you look at the cost other than the cost of sales, which is largely reflective of the index adjustment that we have to do, our people-related costs have only grown by 6%, and our other costs have largely remained in control at 4%. This is an effect of the Accenture program that we carried out, which is a ZBB and ZBO, and the results, as we had said in the previous call, is sustainable, and we will start seeing the benefits of this in times to come. We're actually starting to witness that, and that's one of the reasons why our costs have been kept low. What is also noteworthy for the quarter is that we managed to reduce our finance costs, driven by the fact that we got money out of the OFS, which has been better deployed to reduce our working capital dependency, and that has also reflected in the strong quarterly performances. I'll stop here and take questions on the analytics and the customer experience journey as we move forward, but I think I just want to make this point that this has been one of the strongest quarters for us, and predominantly the travel businesses reflect very strong on this quarter. Also, the forward bookings going forward for the next 6 months are looking very healthy, and we hope to continue with that momentum. On the forex side, our prepaid card portfolios have actually grown by 18% over the same period last year, and we hope to continue to see this momentum going, and we are very confident that the full year forecast that we have put up will actually turn out good for us. Vishal?
Thank you, Mahesh. Good afternoon, everybody. At SOTC Travel, and like Madhavan mentioned earlier, we are seeing a strong retail uplift, and this quarter is the biggest quarter. April, May and June quarter is the biggest for the retail traveler or the holiday traveler. So we are witnessing a very, very strong demand in our holidays business. This business was up by about 15% in this quarter. And it's also reflective of the forward bookings for the future, and which are looking up by about 30% for the upcoming season. And these are bookings all the way up till December. The revenue growth, so this growth has not come at a cost of the margin dilution, so we've managed to hold on to our margins. In fact, we have been able to grow our margins on certain segments also, and the margin revenue growth is also up by 15%, which is in line with the volume growth. The uplift is witnessed on account of the implementation of the analytics program, which has been mentioned by both Mahesh and Madhavan. This is helping us target our leads far better and prioritize them so that we have far better conversions, which is also helping us with a far better sales productivity. Coming to the my side of our business, this business is up by over 23% over last year in the same quarter, which is a very, very strong reflection, because post-GST we had some challenges on this business, and that has been completely wiped away in this quarter. The cost has been largely contained predominantly on account of the ZBB and the ZBO exercise that we had done. It's bringing in the cost efficiency and holding the cost lines pretty well. We've also had an innovation which we've taken to the market, which is called Darshans, which is a spiritual journey, and we organize pilgrim travel, and that's the endeavor to organize this unorganized space and deliver a complete experience to the travel, which includes the travel as well as darshan of the deity. We hope that we will start achieving the critical mass by the year end, and this is right now an innovation, and it's in an investment stage. We've also just about to embark on a customer experience journey. This is a new project, and from our standpoint, this is a transformational exercise which will not only target our existing customers, but also the new customers who possibly do not even consider us. The idea is to redefine our customer value proposition for all lines of our business, and this is something that we will unfold over a period of next couple of months. So that is the update from my end. I will hand it over to Deepak now.
Thank you, Vishal. As far as the inbound business is concerned, the quarter April to June traditionally is the lean season. However, in the first quarter, our sales have been up by 17% over last year, and not at the cost of the margin. In fact, the margin we did better than last year. This was largely due to pieces of business we contracted last year that fructified in this quarter, and we were able to got a big account from Germany, which came good, and this helped us in the off season to deliver good numbers. As far as the costs are concerned, the costs have also been under control. From the overall point of view, we are today leading in certain markets such as Russia, UK, France, Germany, Spain. And these markets are the traditional markets that grow for India. India is growing at 8% and we are by average growing at double digits between 10 to 12%. From an organizational point of view, we opened two offices to service customers better. They were in Calcutta and in Simla. And we also opened an office overseas in Malaysia to cover Asia. Asia is a source market which we are now focused on and trying to bring business into India, and we should be seeing the results over the next few quarters. And the other initiative that we have taken is that we have now got very strongly into the cruise business, because we feel this is a segment that is going to grow in India, especially with the government's initiative towards opening more ports and taking cruise tourism seriously. So that's the update from my side.
Ramesh.
Over to Mr. Ramesh
Ranganathan, please. Yeah. Thanks, Deepak. Good afternoon, everyone. I just want to start by saying I'm dialing in from a remote location, so I'm requesting my colleague Satya to make the opening remarks on Sterling. Before he does, I just want to add that this quarter has been fairly significant for us because of the introduction of the new accounting standards in the AS 115. This has had an effect on our one half of our business, which is our vacation ownership business. I will stop here. I'm available to answer all questions, but I'll ask Satya to give the opening remarks. Satya, please go ahead.
Thank you, sir. Very good afternoon to everyone. This is Satya Narayanan from Sterling. So I will give a brief update on Sterling. I will take it in four parts. The first part being the results. The revenue for the quarter is 77.8 crores as compared to 82.8 crore last year. And EBITDA for the quarter is 2.8 crores versus 6.28 crore last year. This is on comparable basis, that is without the impact of Ind AS 115. The PAT for the quarter is 27.6 crores as compared to a negative of 1.22 crore last year. Again, on a comparable basis, room nights sold during the quarter has increased by 3%. The occupancy for the quarter is at 78%, which is same as last year, but this has come on an increased available room night of 4%. The average room revenue for the quarter is at rupees 4,405 as compared to rupees 4,363 last year. Now, I will take the impact of Ind AS 115. So the new accounting standard Ind AS 115, which came into effect from 1st April 2018, has affected our vacation ownership vertical, which is 50% of our business, by impacting its recognition of revenues, deferred income and the cost. So as per the new standard, the vacation ownership revenue has to be straight lined over the contractual period, which is 25 years in our case, meaning we'll be able to recognize only a maximum of 4% of our new revenues, as compared to 60% upfront what we used to do earlier. On the cost front, only the incremental costs like incentives and commissions, which are linked with sales, can be amortized over 25 years, and all other costs like salaries, overheads, rent, travel, everything which is non-incremental in nature are to be recognized 100% upfront in the same year. The revenue recognized in the past for all the open contracts for vacation ownership, which is open since 1991, had to be restated due to this Ind AS 115, And because of this, we had an income derecognition of rupees 302.6 crores on a net basis. This income which got derecognized will now form part of a deferred income and will get booked into the profit and loss account in the future in the next 13 years. That is on an average at 23.6 crores per year. Next, I'll take the revaluation of land. During the quarter, the company also revalued its land assets, land only the freehold and leasehold land, and the revalued amount came to 550.37 crores. The book value of this land is 71.04 crores, and due to this, we recognize a revaluation gain of rupees 445.3 crores net of deferred tax liability of rupees 33.99 crores. I am taking the results under this new accounting standard Ind AS 115. So post implementation of this standard, the revenue for the quarter is at 73.5 crores and EBITDA for the quarter is 0.66 crores. I will also add here that the company recognized a deferred tax asset of rupees 33.99 crores, which is equivalent to the deferred tax liability arising out of the revaluation of land, which I just referred, which resulted in our PAT of 25.48 crores for the quarter under Ind AS 115. That's the update from my end. Thank you.
I just want to add, Ramesh Swaminathan here, that the other 50% of the business where we do FITs has shown continued growth and it does not get affected by the new accounting standards, Ind AS 115. And even here, the basic business in vacation ownership is unaffected, and neither is the cash flow. The cash flow is also unaffected. It is just that the accounting standards have brought changes in the way we report the vacation ownership income. The company is taking some steps to mitigate this, and I shall answer this as and when we come to it. Thank you.
This is Devashish Nandi here. So I just summarize and talk a few things about the consolidated performance, and then we can open up this session for question and answer. So at a consolidated level, the reported revenue there is a mismatch between the current year and the last year, largely because of the inclusion of Quest in FY18 as compared to Quest being treated as associate in FY19. But if I look at a comparable analysis, like-to-like analysis, then our revenue from operations has grown from about 1575 crores to 1732 crores, which is about a 10% increase over last year. And at a profit level, at the EBT level, it's 75 crores in both the years, so it's been a fairly steady state performance. One thing that I want to put in here is the DMS segment. The DMS segment has been, that when we took it over, it was a business which was in an early stage of a turnaround, so it's a loss-making business. We have been able to do a successful transition. While it's still some way away from making a profit, I think the losses have come down substantially. For example, last year in the same quarter, in April-June, where it was not part of Thomas Cook, it made a loss of around 24 crores, whereas this year the losses have reduced to about 9 crores. So that's a 70% reduction in losses. And so we can say this well on its way to getting into a break-even for the year and maybe a profitability in the years to come. I would also like to comment on the OFS that we did for the sale of stake in Quest. So as you know, we did a OFS in the month of November of 17, and we raised 641 crores. After paying, we obviously had to pay a MAT of about 103 crores on that. On the balance, the balance has been largely utilized for repayment of our longer-term debt. So we have repaid about 194 crores of debt, and that has increased our balance sheet strength very, very substantially. The only long-term debt that we have now on the standalone balance sheet is a 100 crore debenture, which was taken 3 years ago, And while the repayment is due over the next 3 years, we are trying to discuss with the paper holder to make an early payment on that as well. The balance has been utilized to pay off some swaps that we did for financing working capital, and the rest of the money has been invested in short-term securities, which as per our investment policy given by the board. In terms of cash flow, I must admit that June has not been a great quarter because we continue to suffer from the collection issues, especially on the B2B side, notably on our corporate travel, corporate and business travel, and on to some extent on the Forex corporate debtors. So while this situation was brought about last year, and we have discussed it in the earlier calls, that with the imposition of GST, most of the corporates found it were not ready with the payment mechanism, and they're not able to pay because they're not able to take the GST credits. So this led to a large increase in the amount of receivables in September and in December, and to some extent March as well. I am happy to state that the reserves position is now under better control, and we hope to get rid of this problem probably by September, and we get back into positive cash flow territory. I have no doubt in my mind that we'll continue to sort of generate the strong cash flows that we have been doing across the India businesses, and we should be able to replicate what we have been doing in the last 2 years. I would like to conclude with this and then ask Abhijit to open up the call for questions and answers.
Sure, thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have the first question from the line of Mohit Khanna from Nirmal Bang. Please go ahead.
Hello, guys. Congratulations for strong numbers on the travel side especially. One question here. We look at the consolidated accounts. So when the total EBIT under the segment is somewhere around 96 crores. However, in the consolidated P&L, it comes to 67 crores. There's some other expenses of around 14 crores. And is there something else that I'm missing here?
Sorry, can you repeat that question? I'm a little slightly lost here. So you can say that again, please.
Consolidated results only, I'm talking about. When you see the total of all the segment and the segment reporting, the EBIT number is 96 crores.
Correct.
And in the consolidated P&L, you come to EBIT number of 67 crores.
Yeah.
I can see an other expense of somewhere around 14 crores, 13.7 crores something.
Mm-hmm.
So can you just, and is there anything else to bridge this gap? Or am I missing something in the numbers here?
No, so from 96 crores, there are two elements, interest cost of interest of 16 crores and the common expenditure of 13 crores.
Mm-hmm.
And, which finds a reflection in the consolidated statement anyway. So the other expenses that is, the 13 crores that is there is the unallocated expenses, which forms part of the, in the main sheet, an item 2E, that forms the out of the other expenses. So that's the unallocated part of the expenses.
So there's no one-off in these numbers here?
No, not really. That's the question, no. That I can straight away clarify. So we can't allocate, you will obviously know that we can't allocate all the expenses. So these are the expenses that have not got allocated across the four business verticals.
Fair enough. What is the associate income from which we recorded this quarter?
The share of that is given on item 8 in the summary of consolidated results. So that is 4.9 crores.
I mean, is there any mechanism that you follow to record this? That's 49% stake you have.
Yeah, I'll explain that. So what we do is we take the profits of our associates, which is specifically Quest in this particular case. And from that, what we consider is that so as soon as we considered Quest as an associate, we also had to do a PPA exercise and consider what are the intangibles in that, notably brands and relationship, etc. And as per Ind AS, we had to also amortize that over a period of Ind AS and IFRS, we had to amortize them. So the 4.9 crores that you see is a share of profit minus the amortization of the intangibles.
Okay. Fair enough. So another thing, what is the growth in the outbound business? And if you can just give me the dollar amount for all the outbound, inbound MICE numbers.
Mahesh, would you like to take that question?
I'll give that number. Just give me a minute. If you look at the overall outbound numbers, our total value growth has been 14% in rupee terms, and in dollar terms, obviously, you'll have to also factor in that for the holidays business, our booking starts in January, actually starts somewhere in November of the previous year and runs to March and April. So the rupee effect or the devaluation effect of rupee for April, June may not be so relevant because we've seen about 6-7% rupee depreciation in the period April, June. So if I say if it's a comparable number, we would see about 12% dollar growth.
Okay, so 14% rupee growth that we have seen here. What is the revenue recorded in the outbound business?
The growth in revenue has been about 11%.
Okay, and the revenue recorded, rupee crores?
So, in this quarter, we have recorded 138 crores of revenue in this quarter.
Okay. And just could you just please talk about DMS business, what was the revenue recorded there, and 9 crores, I heard you saying that losses have come down. What really is the remaining issue, and what is the step taking forward?
Okay, so DMS sales recorded was 337 crores and revenue of 53 crores.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Just give me a minute, please. Okay, 347 crores, I'm sorry, 347 crores and revenue of about 53 crores. The losses, effective loss that we took in this quarter is about 9.3 crores.
What is the real reason? Where is the problem? I think last time we spoke about there was an issue with Middle East, some problem in the Middle East and South Africa.
Let me explain this, okay? And I think we have to step back a bit on this. So when he took over this business, the reason that Kuni decided to sell this business was it did not fit in with the line of business anymore. One, and because they sold off their leisure travel business to other people across the globe. One. The second reason is that this business was a loss-making business from 2016 onwards. So they did not obviously want to continue with the loss-making business. We saw an opportunity because we felt that this business could be turned around and it also give us a global reach, which is why we took over this business. Having said so, we also knew that the turnaround will not happen in a quarter or two. It will take a couple of years of sustained efforts to make it profitable. So we've actually done, so far we have, you know, if you take, actually look at, it's we have just completed 1 year of that journey. And if I now look at, and we have now got two comparable quarters. So if you look at the same quarter last year, when it was not part of Thomas Cook, it was still part of Kuoni, they made a loss of 224 crores. Okay, and let me just give you some numbers. In terms of sales in this quarter, the sales has gone up by about 5% as compared to last year's same quarter. The revenues have gone up by about 25%, and the losses have come down by more than 70%. So I think that's a very clear signal that there is a turnaround happening in that business. We also need to recognize the fact that this is the DMS business, which is basically is effectively the inbound business. It's a replica of the inbound business that we have in India. For a large number of these units, April to June, which is the quarter under consideration, is not the season time. For example, let me just give you a couple of examples. It is not a season time either in the Middle East or USA or in Kenya. So this is definitely the low season. Asian Trails, which handles Southeast Asia, Southeast Asia and ATM, which handles Australia, these are the entities for which it was season to a large extent. So we are not seeing the full impact of the turnaround. We are seeing only part. But if only a part turnaround can cause a 70% reduction in losses, I can leave it to your imagination as to what a full turnaround will do.
Great. Yeah. Just moving on to Forex and then Sterling quickly. For Forex, EBIT margins were at 33%, up from 26 last quarter. So normal range we still maintain at 45 to 50% or so EBIT margin business for Forex.
Yes, the EBIT margins for the Forex business will be around 45%, and we will consistently be at that.
Right, and the swap costs have come down in this business, as you said that DSOs are normalizing in corporate ticketing. What is the current DSO for the quarter in this corporate ticketing business?
So for the corporate travel, we used to typically run a 34-35 day DSO. Because of the problems with GST, as Debashish mentioned, it went up to about 60 days. For the current quarter, as we said before, we've actually been able to bring it down marginally. It's come down to about 54 days now.
Okay. And for the Sterling, I know there are some accounting changes here. Can you just speak about the revenues have been tad lower than expected on the street. So what has really gone, is there anything wrong with revenue not being recognized or demand from public? And, you know, something on the revenue side for Sterling, because that has been a disappointment.
Okay. Before Satya gives you the actual details, this is Ramnathan here. I want to step in. One half of our business, which is the FIT and the hotel operations business, has done well and has grown. It is the vacation ownership business that has not grown as compared to the previous year. And this was deliberate because we knew that IFRS is coming in, and under the new Ind AS 115, we wanted to figure out how it works. The way it stands now is the more you sell, the more you lose on your bottom line. And in the sense that the revenues get straight-lined over 25 years, and all the fixed expenses other than expenses directly related to sales are all, you know, booked 100% upfront. So we sort of went slow a couple of months to understand this, because we knew we could pick it up. We didn't want to just pile it on, and that's the only reason. Otherwise, there are no changes, nothing to do with the market or any of these. Satya, can you give the numbers, please, or in case you need the numbers?
Yes.
Yeah, sure. So on the numbers front, if you look at Mohit, if we had not adopted this Ind AS 115, then from our new vacation ownership sales, we would have recognized approximately close to 11 crores higher revenues than what we have recognized currently. Having said this, since we also de-recognized the revenues of the past period, we were able to recognize additional 7 crores of revenues which came in because of the going back of the same revenues which got de-recognized recently. So net-net, our revenue recognition is down by approximately 4 to 4.3 crores because of this new standard. Otherwise, it will be higher to that extent.
Okay. So, if we are facing issue with this new accounting standard here,
do you think the business going forward should be more inclined towards non-vacation ownership and sort of become a pure play hotels business?
Not really. I must mention here that there has been no change in the market. Okay, there are still customers there for it, for the vacation ownership product. It is just that a new accounting standard is sort of, stating it differently. As I said, there is no change in cash flows, and vacation ownership brings in a lot of cash flows other than bringing in customers for a 25-year period without repeat marketing, expenses. What we intend doing is that since the market is there and we need to adjust, make changes in the product and changes in our sales organization structure. For example, I'm just going to mention one. If the company were to sell with dedicated, sort of sales team, then the entire cost is booked upfront. Whereas if I can move it as a commission on sales into DSAs and even our own salespeople on a variable model, then we get the benefit of splitting the expenses also over, straightlining the expenses also over 25 years. So we are making some of these changes. In fact, we are making some changes this quarter. Because there are some major changes, it will make changes in our agreement with the customers and so on. Therefore, it is taking a little while, but to answer your question, we will continue with vacation ownership. But it will be a little bit subdued till such time we sort this out. So we will probably take another 2-3 months to sort it out, but we are trying to maintain the volumes and not really give up on it. And, so that is something that we will deliver in the quarter. I don't think there should be a problem. But the growth substantially will come after we finish our restructuring exercise.
Fair enough. I'll just move back to the queue. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pritesh Shetha from Lucky Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. I wanted to understand a bit on the financial services side of the business, which is the Forex business, which declined last year and continues to decline in the first quarter as well. And there is corresponding drop in margins. So first, if you could highlight the reason here. Second, how is the structural landscape in this business shaping up? Because you have digitization happening on one hand, and lower Forex. So if you could, throw some light there. And lastly, in this business, just wanted to know, structurally, is there a change in the gross margin or spreads in the FX? So three questions of the single division.
Okay. This is Mahesh here. I will take on all the questions, sir. First, I think we've mentioned this in the last quarter also. From a focus point of view, on the foreign exchange side, we are completely focused on the retail segment. So we're kind of taking our eyes a little bit off the wholesale segment where we were trading currency to other market operators. And clearly this move is aimed by the fact that there was demonetization, the demand for currency in the market is lower. And to couple it in the current quarter, we've seen a sharp depreciation in rupee, close to about 7%. So in that kind of a market, the volumes definitely do get impacted, and the impact that you see on the revenue numbers here is only and only account of that dip in the overall top line volumes. But at the same time, what's noteworthy to see here is that our retail volumes have actually grown by about 4%. Our corporate volumes have grown by about 8%. The transaction counts have grown by 12%. And our margins, because our focus is on retail, have actually expanded by about 15%, moving up from 1.3% to about 1.442%. So effectively, on all parameters or on metrics that are very important for a transactional, for a rupee business that's managed at the last two decimals, we've seen growth across. From a structural question point of view, I think the money is moving the digital way, and as I mentioned in my opening remarks, we are a leading player in the prepaid card space. In the owned networks side, we are the largest distributor of prepaid card for MasterCard. We have about 14% market share, and our volumes for the current quarter have grown 18% as compared to the comparable quarter previous year.
So here, So here when it's going digital way, so we now have a much higher competition versus bank than in the erstwhile business model where the competition from bank was low. So is it a right conclusion to make?
It may not be. I think the way you need to look at it is that banks are only operating with custom account holders, whereas we are open to the entire travel segment, number one. Number two, I think what is also important to see is that in terms of compliances, for a transaction of a low value, the banks are not really going to be involved into the nitty-gritties of doing a transaction, which is our bread and butter. So our focus is very, very high. KYC requirements on these businesses are very stringent, and that's effectively what we focus on, and we have got the competencies though. So clearly, I think we have an edge to the market, and if you look at the portfolio as a whole, we've been growing at about 24-25% CAGR for the last 4 years on the prepaid side, and I don't see no reason why this cannot continue to grow.
So just on the first question when you were answering, so according to the numbers last year and in the quarter also, it's the wholesale business which has declined, whereas the retail business has grown.
Yes.
And the prepaid card business has grown, right?
Yes.
So the sum total of these two businesses, what would be the growth and the share in the business, whereas what would be the share of wholesale business and the corresponding decline?
So wholesale contributes roughly about 52% of our overall volumes, and that has seen, I mean, typically if I put wholesale and within that wholesale I pick up US dollar denominated deals, I think we have seen about 28% reduction there, and that has kind of impacted the overall volume because we have seen a sharp depreciation in rupee in the current quarter. If you look at the depreciation rupee for the period April to June, we have seen close to about 7.5%, and that kind of a depreciation, when it happens, obviously people are going to wait and watch. To that extent, we have seen an impact on that side, but correspondingly, we've seen a growth on the euro side of it. So it played out, but yes, we had seen about 28% dip on the wholesale side. Retail contributes about 48% of our business, and that has continued to grow at 4%.
Okay, 48% business grows 4% and 52% business declines. That's how it is,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So this 4%, what would, so ideally this business, if you referred, said growth at about 20%+ in the past years. So what should be the growth rate of this business incrementally?
So if you break, see the way you need to look at it is that you take the wholesale out of the equation, and if you look at the retail, I would presume the retail business will continue to grow about 12-15% YOY, and that trend is visible to us. If you look at the transaction count, and as I mentioned, that's a major important metric that we follow, which is a measurement of how many new customers we are acquiring. We've actually seen a 13% growth in the number of travelers or customers who are transacting with us. And, while we have seen a degrowth on the wholesale side, the 4% growth on retail is on the back of a higher margin, which has expanded from 1.30 to 1.42.
Okay, last year, why is the growth rate projected at 12% versus 25% growth rate existing in the past?
But that's only on the prepaid card side. You need to appreciate that on the retail side, about 40% of our portfolio is prepaid, and the rest will be currency, telegraphic transfers and stuff like that. Whereas on the corporate side, we have a close to 80% penetration with prepaid cards. So obviously, there is a mix of currency where the the set of customers who are moving away from currency and coming to the digital platform is a slow transition.
Actually, I didn't understand this. You were blended growth 25% in the past, which was inclusive of everything. Now your incremental growth rate is about 12-15% in the retail side. And obviously, that's half of the business. So your blended growth rate at the company level will be less than 12%. Or you're referring to 15% at the company level, financial services, in which retail will grow 25 and the other part will shrink 12. That's how it is?
No, Pritesh, I think you need to break this up. As I said, on the wholesale side, we don't expect growth to come. It will be moderate or low.
Okay.
We expect that to be around the 3-4% range. But on the retail side, we expect a 12-15% growth. And within the retail, prepaid is a portfolio that we do. And over there, I expect a 24-25% growth to come in.
Okay. Done. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we'd like to remind participants that you may press star and one to join the question queue. The next question is from the line of Vineet Malu from Birla Sun Life. Please go ahead.
Hi. My question is about Sterling business. I mean, have I understood right that because of this accounting standard change, our revenue is actually going to look lower than what they used to look under previous accounting standard, and hence our margins and profitability will also look lower. Is that the correct understanding going ahead? Hello.
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 Hello. Vinu, this is Satya here. As you rightly mentioned, because of this new accounting standard, we get to recognize only 4% of our revenue from new sales as compared to 60% previously. Hence, to that extent, it is going to affect our top line.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
Satya, I would like to add
Vinny?
Something here.
Hello.
Can I add something here, Devashish here? Just to add to what Satya is saying, I think one point is we missed out in all this is that this accounting standard applies with retrospective effect, as was pointed out earlier, and therefore the accruals that you have made in the past and you're sitting in the reserves have been nullified. Now the new standard will, this, all this will come back for the next few years. At a rate of around 25 to 30 crores per year. So effectively, in a taking a theoretical position, even if I don't sell a single vacation ownership in a year, I'll still recognize an income of 25 to 30 crores on account of vacation ownership alone. So one needs to keep the, while obviously you have a point that because of the change in accounting standard, there will be a change in the way we recognize the income. But there is also an additional income that will recognize on account of the past. That's one. The second thing is also, the second thing that I want to point out is none of this has anything to do with the cash flow of the company. The cash flow of the company will be undisturbed. It does not impact. It's only an accounting change that has been made. And there will be the whatever cash generation the company was making earlier and now there will be no change on account of a change in the accounting standard.
If the cash flows are going to remain unchanged, then why are we saying that, you know, the more we sold, more losses we are going to incur, and that's why, you know, slowed down in on our sales side.
Can I explain that?
If I may answer this, please.
Sure you can.
Yeah. Okay. Let me clarify this on the P&L. If you just take a vacation ownership, for every item that we sell or every unit that we sell, let us say it is 1 lakh of rupees, we can book only 4,000 rupees because our obligation for this customer is over 25 years. So as per Ind AS, we have to straight line the recognition over the period of the obligation. So 4,000 rupees. Now, our sales and marketing costs are to the tune of around 35% to 40%. This includes fixed costs, variable costs, the whole lot. Now, these have to be booked upfront, except for costs that are post-sales and which are variable. For example, incentives, commissions, and so on. So what happens is, under the present circumstances, if I sell more, if I sell 10 units, I can book 40. But I'll also have to write in 350. If I sell 20 units, I can do 80, but it will become 700. So P&L looks odd. Cash flow does not change because the cash is still coming in a separate stream from which we have with customer, whether it is 12 months upfront payment, 12 months, 18 months, and so on. So, to answer the second question, as the way it stands, yes, this is how it looks. So, we need to now make structural changes in sales as well as some product changes to get out of this. So, that is the strategy that we are adopting.
So my question is that, you know, if cash flows do not change, then why have we slowed down on our sales activities just to make P&L look good?
Yeah, no. We didn't want the P&L is not looking good, to answer your question. We just did it for 2 months because now after 3 months I have this clarity. We all have this clarity at the end of 3 months. When we started out and all of a sudden the announcement came at the end of March, we were going all around to try and understand what is happening, and it took a very long time.
It took an extremely long time for us to understand, because even the statutory auditors took quite a while to understand this. Devashish, if you can, you know, add on this.
Sure. So, just to take off from where Ramesh ended, this notification came in at the, you know, on 31st of March, if I remember correctly, and it was effective from 1st of April. So it took the industry by surprise. So it is did not it impacted the entire vacation ownership industry. It also has impacted the real estate industry, for that matter, to a lesser extent, because obviously they don't sell 25 years sort of packages. Now, so what we did, so it has taken the industry, and I'll use the word industry specifically because it is not only Sterling but also Mahindra and others who are impacted by this. So the people in the industry sort of met up and, you know, took it up with the regulatory authorities, which is the CA Institute, which in this particular case, as to figure out, you know, to voice their concern, as to figure out what's the way out. So they sought opinion from the expert advisory committee, and that is a process that's going on. That's process that likely to take some more time. In the meanwhile, they also try to figure out that within the law or within the standard as it has been pronounced now, how best do we deal with this? Now, this has been done with various discussion has been happening with experts in this field. As Ramesh pointed out, it has taken them about 2 months to figure out the way forward. What's the way forward? One obviously is that still such time the expert advisor committee comes back with an opinion, we'll have to live with this. And if it changes, then it's all good. The other thing, of course, there, you know, Ramesh also talked about, you know, reworking the packages, etc., which is something that Sterling will have to work on and figure out a way forward on that. So in the 2 months, the knee-jerk reaction, so to say, was to hold back on sales, because instead of recognizing 60% of the income upfront, we have started recognizing only 4% of the income upfront. So there was a sort of cutback on the sales initiative, but that I think has changed the last 1 month. From June onwards, I think that has changed.
Correct.
So that's where we are. Obviously, the way forward is for the industry to determine as a body.
So my broad question is, how can an accounting standard change dictate your business strategy in terms of structuring products and sales policies?
You're absolutely right, it should not. Accounting standard is an enabler, and it should not sort of interfere with the business policy.
Leaving accounting aside, what are the KPIs that, you know, that we as investors can look at to understand how this business is performing?
Okay. See, what you will need to do is to look at continued increase in volumes. So we need to restructure the product, as I said. I'll tell you what I mean further on this. We will probably do a few shorter term products and at much lower sales and marketing expense with over a shorter period of time. It is a fact that the accounting standard is dictating the business, and there is no getting away from it. We met a lot of people, and there is no getting away from it. So now we are making changes that are required. So we are, for example, moving on to paying people on sale rather than taking on any fixed cost before sale. So there are quite a few changes that are happening. Therefore, we will be able to straight line a higher percentage of the cost. That is what we are looking at. And if we do that, then things look good. That is one. The second thing is, what has happened in the restatement of the past years is that they have all gone and sat on our deferred income in the balance sheet. And therefore, we get almost 25 crores every year coming into our books. So as Devashish said, even if we don't do anything, we'll have 25 crores of income. So the idea is to continue to grow the business, so the KPIs will broadly remain the same. There are no changes. You have to look at volume and you have to look at revenues over a period of time. So in the interim, just for a very short while till we make the changes, there could be some blips. And as of this quarter, to answer your question, we are not, you know, keeping our volumes low. We are going for volumes and we are working around in a whole lot of ways.
Sure. Thank you so much. We hope that you will share some of the KPIs with investors in future so that we can look at it over a period of time. That's all from my side.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we'd like to remind participants once again that you may press star and one to join the question queue. The next question is from the line of Sarvesh Gupta from Maximal Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, for taking my question. So this is more for Madhavan from a broad strategy perspective. When we had announced this restructuring of the business, and since we were restructuring so many of the moving parts, I wanted to understand the rationale behind not demerging Sterling Resorts as well and keeping it still under, you know, with along with our travel business.
Okay, to answer the question of why we are not demerging Sterling alongside Quess, first of all, Quess has followed an acquisition strategy of adding multiple companies during the course of the last 4 years that they've been a part of the Thomas Cook family. And as you will appreciate, they went out and did an IPO. That's for point number one. Point number two is that they went and made a particular acquisition, which was called Terrier Security Services, which specifically required that they drop below the 50% mark. And if they, in order to get the necessary regulatory approvals, it had to decline further. So I think, in a sense, we believe that since both Thomas Cook and Quess were making acquisitions, the reporting of results was becoming very complicated. Thirdly, the value of Thomas Cook was getting understated through this whole overhang of Quess. Fairfax and we decided that the best option after we did the OFS was to actually spin off Quess to the shareholders of Thomas Cook as a result of that. Now, if I take step back and look at Sterling, Sterling, first of all, has not followed an acquisition strategy. It is in the process of being shepherded back by Ramesh and his team to profitability. The reality is we don't see it opportune to spin it off at this point of time. Secondly, you know, accounting standards, which we've been talking about so far, is something that's totally outside our control. Now, you had a valid point in saying, should accounting standards dictate strategy? But the reality is that the way the accounting standard has been interpreted by the accounting fraternity, it left us no choice but to accept the standard and then start realigning our products, which is exactly what Ramesh has said. So in distinct possibility, you're going to see a 25-year product not necessarily being given the priority, but shorter-term products, which will go straight back to where they were before doing this. I hope I've answered your question.
So partially, sir. So the other point is that what is the rationale behind having, so you had one opportunity now to kind of do away with this, you know, structure of having various sort of disparate businesses under one roof. Now, are there any particular synergies? Because the way I see it is that, you know, Sterling is a very different beast compared to our travel business. So why not use the opportunity to kind of just make it, make Thomas Cook a focused company into travel only? And, you know, why continue with having a portfolio investment approach as well?
Sarvesh, let me address this. First of all, I think you must recognize the philosophy of Fairfax when they acquired Thomas Cook India Limited was that they wanted to make investments in India far more aggressively than they had done in the past. So they identified Thomas Cook India as being one of the holding companies and clearly said that they would buy corporate entities where they liked the management, they believed that there was a sustainable story of growth in that in those companies, and that's where Quess and Sterling came into the picture. Thomas Cook has got two hats. One, as a holding company where we can deploy the surplus cash which we are generating in sizable amounts into acquisition. At the same time, we also have a travel vertical. Now, the reality is that in these situations, you are going to find that we will make acquisitions as we have done. If you look at Quess, it was a very successful acquisition which matured in a short period of time. Sterling, given the amount of problems it faced in the past, this we knew all along that this was going to take some time before it would return to profitability. And we actually believe that today Quess is at a point where it has returned to profitability, and there will be sustained growth going forward in a combination of hotel as well as vacation ownership. Now, vacation ownership also generates cash. The hotel business also generates cash for us. So from our perspective, we still see value in Sterling, and we have no intentions of diversifying it just because it has not met our expectations in terms of a turnaround as per the original plan, but we actually still believe that it is being turned around.
Understood, sir. And is there a possibility of using Thomas Cook as a vehicle for further addition of further disparate businesses under this roof?
Yes, there are. We are still generating cash. So, look, I don't think we look at it as disparate. If we see a company, which it could be in the travel space, it could be outside the travel space, it could be adjacent to the travel space, we would look at these companies if we believe that they generate profit for us. So, that's a Fairfax philosophy of a holding company. If you look at Fairfax India Limited, and I must explain that Fairfax India Limited was created because the Fairfax realized that our balance sheet was not big enough to get into some of the projects, and the gestation period those projects needed was not something that Thomas Cook could afford. So they've created a wide variety of businesses there. We are not as diversified as they are, but if an opportunity comes up tomorrow, we are definitely not going to let it pass.
Understood, sir. And sir, because of this huge QIP that you had, sale, offer for sale that you had done, and you had paid down a lot of debt. So is there any way of returning the cash to the shareholders, or that cash would be there with the company to A, pay down all the debt, which takes away the benefit of the tax shield on the interest payments, and B, for further acquisitions. So how are you seeing that?
So let me address, there are two questions in this. I'll address one, and Devashish will address the interest issue. Look, very clearly over the last 6 years, we've invested in excess of 1,000 crores, most of it from our own cash that we generated into acquiring companies. Selling 5% of Quess brought back a part of that money back to us. In terms of rewarding the shareholder by spinning off the Quest shares to Thomas Cook shareholders, we are actually rewarding them with free shares, which in any other circumstance we may have looked at other opportunities. But I think this was most probably the most economical and the best way to reward our shareholders by giving them direct control of the Quest shares at no cost.
Yeah, and just to add to it, I think there are two things to be looked at. One is, of course, what Madhavan talks about, rewarding the shareholder with the Quest shares. The other is, by following this strategy of using the cash for inorganic growth, we have been able to grow our own business and consequently the share price. You'll recall that when Fairfax acquired us back in 2012, the share price was 52 rupees, and today it's hovering around 260. So that's a 5 times growth in about 6 years' time. So that's another way of rewarding the shareholder who manages to hold on to these shares. In terms of the other point that you raised is getting the tax shield on the interest. Having paid the MAT of 103 crores, tax will be a book charge. it will not be a cash charge anymore for the next 4 to 5 years. We'll need probably need about four years to recover that, as because this is at a standalone entity and not at a consolidated level. So as far as cash is concerned, which is what we are mostly concerned with, we are shielded in a way.
Understood, sir. Thanks a lot for answering the questions patiently, and all the best for the future quarters.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll take that as the last question. I would now like to hand the conference back to the management for closing comments.
Okay. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for participating in the call. And I'd also like to thank all my colleagues in the Thomas Cook Group who participated in this call, as well as Sterling Holiday Resorts. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. On behalf of IIFL Capital Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect your lines.